You're listening to Just Ask the Question, Adventures in Reporting with your host, Brian Karam.
In 3, 2, 1. Hi, and welcome back to Just Ask the Question. I am your host, Brian Karam. With me today is an old friend and, well, gosh, Mark, and, you know, no one knows trivia better. But our old friend Mark Zaid is with us to talk about one of the strangest things we've talked about in a while, and that would be the Havana syndrome. It was recently on 60 Minutes. Mark and I, for those who don't know, Mark is probably one of the best known FOIA attorneys in the country. And we recently tried to get some information on Havana syndrome from the U.S. government. And we were told it was a matter of matter of national security. Correct, Mark? And they couldn't give us any info.
Yeah, after we actually obtained for the first time a great deal of information of internal intelligence report products that had not been seen before. So we ultimately, we did win significantly, but at the end of the day, when we asked for more information, national security.
There you go. With that, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to be
in this modern age of misinformation and deceit. Just Ask the Questions newsletter cuts through the BS and gets to the truth with Brian's in-depth articles, columns, and exclusive content not released anywhere else. Get the scoop and stay in the know. Sign up for the Just Ask the Question newsletter now at substack.com/JATQ podcast.
Hi, we are back. It is Just Ask the Question. I am your host, Brian Karam. With me today is probably one of the best FOIA attorneys in the country. I'll say that unequivocally. Mark Zaid. Mark, thanks for joining us. We won't ask you any trivia in this issue, but let's talk a little bit about Havana syndrome. I want to go back to the beginnings of Havana syndrome. It's not as, you know, it goes back to 2018, I guess, or 2017, but it's actually started before then, did it not?
Yeah, and actually, I'll say outright, I hate the term Havana syndrome. It is such an inappropriate term, and it's in many ways, you know, one of the FOIA cases I've been handling for almost a decade now is that of D.B. Cooper, the skyjacker from 1971, and anyone who's interested in the topic can watch me on the Netflix documentary on D.B. Cooper that came out a couple of years ago. But the thing about this is D.B. Cooper doesn't exist. It was a guy, a fake name, Dan Cooper. Right. And some reporter misread or misremembered the name, published an article that said D.B. Cooper, and it stuck. But it's been wrong the entire time. Now, Havana syndrome is very similar. I blame it a lot on lazy journalism because it's an easy term that people can use, and they just won't move away from it. It's in many ways like the Spanish flu.
Yeah.
Poor Spain. Spain had nothing to do with the Spanish flu.
Midwest of the United States.
Kansas. Yeah. It was in Kansas it started, but I guess the first case or something was reported in Spain, so it got called the Spanish flu. Havana syndrome happened because in 2016, a few dozen Americans and Canadians, diplomats primarily, real diplomats, but also intelligence officers, were impacted simultaneously over a period of weeks. Simultaneously meaning in one group, but not, you know, not all at the same time. Person hit here, person hit there. Over a period of months, most of them didn't know that the other person was being hit. And it became public. And so it got termed Havana syndrome because nobody knew what the heck it was. It happened in Havana. There have actually been more AHI cases, anomalous health incidents, in Vienna, Austria, than there were probably in Havana. But we don't call it that. We don't call it Bogota syndrome. We don't call it Tyson's Corner syndrome, which for those who are local know that is a Northern Virginia location. But there are a number of incidents of clients of mine and others who were hit in Tyson's Corner.
And what are the symptoms?
So the symptoms can vary. T- usually they involve incredible pounding pressure, painful pressure into the head. There could be problems with vision, vertigo, nausea. Some people have projectile vomiting as a result of it. Massive migraines, continuing migraines. That's in the short term. Sometimes there is loud sounds, but understanding, because originally people thought this was an acoustic weapon, because a lot of people reported, not everyone, that they heard loud sounds while they were being impacted. They're not hearing anything. There is no sound. Any of us who have tinnitus, like I do, ringing in the ears, there's no ringing in my ears. Nobody else can hear this. Only I can, because it's an issue with your inner ear problems and your brain is interpreting it as sound. So the notion that there were crickets making this noise, because actually one of my clients recorded on their cell phone the sound of crickets and said, this is what I kept hearing, because it was similar to what they were hearing, but it wasn't crickets because there's no external sound. It can, over a period of time, turn into cancers, leukemia, Parkinson's. That is our belief. That is not something I could legally prove at this time, but that is the belief. And swinging this back to your original question, I would trace this back to the 1960s and what's called the Moscow Signal. The Moscow Signal was the Soviet Union bombarding our embassy in Moscow with low-level microwaves for years. For years. We knew about it, didn't tell anybody, didn't tell our staff, didn't tell the ambassador, didn't tell the CIA station chief. Finally, it came out, and there were actually congressional hearings about it in the late 70s, exposing this, especially the fact that the U.S. government didn't do anything other than eventually tell the Soviets to cut it out. In fact, Henry Kissinger told his counterpart in the Soviet Union to cut it out, and that the U.S. believed that our ambassador to the Soviet Union, who died of, I think, leukemia or some cancer, was a byproduct of the Moscow Signal, the microwave radiation. Now, I started working on this case years before Havana. I didn't know anything about Havana until it was reported in the press. I was representing an NSA, a National Security Agency employee, who had been hit in the mid-1990s in a still classified country, which has publicly been reported by others as Russia, Moscow, he and a colleague being hit with microwave weapons. And they both developed at the same time a rare form of Parkinson's. Rare meaning even among Parkinson folks, this was rare. And they developed it in their 40s and 50s when normally it would happen in their 70s and 80s. And then Havana happened. And since then, it's happened all over the world on at least 6 out of 7 continents. I think Antarctica is the only place we know where there hasn't been a reported AHI incident.
I want to go back to that, because one of the things when I talk to the people at NIH and I talk to my sources in government and I talk to scientists who work, you know, not in the public, they all describe microwave, you know, this type of some of them call it microwave poisoning, but this type of interference from microwaves is a byproduct. It's definitely microwave radiation. All of what is known of, you know, being hit by microwave radiation, at General Electric, they talk about, some of those very same symptoms when they have defective microwave microwave ovens. So, I mean, why is there even any question as to why or how?
So I think the question has been less about, could this be caused by microwaves? Because as you said, lots of scientists can tell you, this is consistent with microwave or other type of directed energy exposure. And let's be very clear about it. We, the United States, invented this technology 70 so years ago. We've done tremendous amount of experimentation using microwaves and radio frequencies as weapons, for other scientific purposes. I came across an article today that was from last year where the DOD was experimenting on ferrets using microwave and radio frequencies to see how they react. And there are countless publicly available documents of studies of the use of microwaves and current solicitations by the government for weapons, for defensive technology, for detection technology. The questions have arisen more about how could a device of this nature be created, and how could it be implemented in a way that couldn't be seen? Would you not need to put it in a big van and drive around the town to expose people rather than a handheld laser type device? That's where, when I see people who are commenting who have some degree of technical capabilities, some knowledge of this type of energy, they will often say that because they have no fundamental knowledge of what the governments have been able to do in order to package it into a handheld or small enough device that could impact people. I did an interview yesterday, actually, with Australia's 60 Minutes that will air shortly. And somebody mentioned to me that they had been based in Israel for a period of years as a reporter. And they watched the Israelis use an acoustic device as crowd control on Palestinian protesters. But this was a big device on a truck. And they beamed it at them, and you saw dozens of people just fall to the ground, you know, with unseen energy. So it's about compartmentalizing or compacting it is where a lot of the debate comes. But I will tell you that there absolutely, if you talk to the scientists on the inside, and you can see there are patents that have already designed it to be handheld.
All right. Well, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, I want to talk about some of the kickback from that. I mean, it sounds like science fiction to some, but and there's also those who have, well, let's say the nut jobs that are involved in that. So we're going to talk about all that when we get back. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hey, Just Ask the Question podcast listeners. If you've got a second, head on over to Twitter and follow our official page, JATQ Podcast. That's JATQ Podcast.
In this modern age of misinformation and deceit, Just Ask the Questions newsletter cuts through the BS and gets to the truth with Brian's in-depth articles, columns, and exclusive content not found anywhere else. Get the scoop and stay in the know. Sign up for the Just Ask the Question newsletter now at substack.com/JATQ podcast.
Hi, we're here with FOIA attorney Mark Zaid. And probably one of the best trivia experts in the country, right? I gotta plug that. So, so Mark, we were talking when we left about the very existence of microwave instruments that are being used that could be behind what is called the Havana syndrome. But with this, I have seen, and I'm sure you have too, a number of people who believe that it's a U.S. conspiracy, it's a government conspiracy, that our government is behind it. There's, as you have said before, these are well-funded people, but they're a little misguided, are they not? I mean, we're talking about what, in essence, to them is a U.S. conspiracy to harm our own people.
Yeah, there are many who believe that. I mean, I don't believe that. I will say, look, I get contacted by people every day who believe that it's the U.S. government that's doing it, that it's certain corporations that are engaged in this, that it's their neighbors, it's their FedEx delivery guy. I don't doubt that these people are suffering from whatever ailment they believe. I mean, shoot, some of them sent me their medical records and scans and stuff. You know, they're suffering from something and they're searching for answers.
What do you think is, what do you think is the real answer? Let's just put that out there. I mean, this sounds like something out of Dune. I mean, it's like the Atreides and sonic weapons. This is next level type of stuff, but it's not beyond, as you said, it's not beyond the government. It's not beyond existing patents. It's not beyond existing technology, but it's something that shocks people to believe that it could be handheld or at least concealable and not in a large van that has to roam around the countryside. So what do you think? What do you think is the size and implementation of the weapon that's used, and what do you think is really going on?
I think it's a small enough handheld device, whatever this might be. You know, in the 60 Minutes broadcast, there was an intercepted phone call in Frankfurt, Germany, involving a Russian language, I should say, at least. I don't know if it was a Russian. I mean, we think it was a Russian, but at least it was Russian language, about, you know, should we leave the device on all night? And which wouldn't make any, you know, wouldn't have any evidentiary value other than if you found out, oh, by the way, there was an AHI attack on a CIA officer right there that night. So, look, science fiction, sure, I get it. This sounds like science fiction to people because why would they know this to exist? You know, what purpose could it have?
What's the purpose?
But, you know, look, watch back to Star Trek original series in the 60s. Look how much of that technology is now in existence today, right? This sure as hell looks like a communicator to me. This is
just
exactly,
a cell phone.
Right? Yeah, I'm holding up a cell phone. This was a communicator. Or I remember watching an episode with Terry Garr. They went back in time to the 1968 they're from the 25th century, so they went back in time. And she's talking and the typewriter was typing.
Yeah.
It was voice recognition technology. I don't think it existed back then. I presume somebody was typing in the background somewhere, you know, or there was a machine that was designed like a player piano, player typewriter. But obviously, you know, now that is nothing
right
today. So I don't understand why people are so, you know, doubtful about this type of technology that it would exist. And it exists in the military circle. So why would you not?
So what is the purpose? Is it an instrument of terror? Is it, I mean, the people targeted? What do you think is behind all of it as far as purpose?
So we never had a really good answer that I recall having seen publicly as to why Moscow signal. Why was the Soviet Union bombarding our embassy with microwaves? The working theory, and it's probably actually in the papers when I go back and look through them, was that the technology was designed to trigger, listening devices. They planted listening devices in the embassy, well-known stories.
Yes.
Fact. You can go to the International Spy Museum or the NSA Cryptology Museum, and you can see exactly what I'm talking about because they have them on display, where these were non-mechanical devices so that, you know, if you did a sweep with your whatever tracking equipment you had back then, it, you know, like a Geiger counter, it wouldn't trigger. You wouldn't know it's there. In fact, our ambassador to Moscow had a listening device that the Soviets planted in his office for like 7 years. It was triggered by energy. And they would turn it on and turn it off. And I don't know how the technology works. I'm a lawyer, not a scientist. You know, it's like Dr. McCoy, right?
Okay, doc.
Yeah. And so I have no idea. But it would turn it on. Now, my working theory would be this is an evolutionary technology that has modified over time to be a surveillance eavesdropping technology that has become weaponized.
So what now you're saying it was initially a byproduct of
this is the harmful impact is a byproduct.
And it was unintentional at first. It was to trigger a listening device and then it's evolved into something that has been weaponized to hurt people.
It always could hurt people. It was microwaves.
Right.
It could always hurt people depending on the amount of energy that was obviously directed at someone. Just like, you know, if you had a malfunctioning microwave.
Right.
In fact, there was a guy in Germany who got arrested and prosecuted because he took the door off of his microwave and made it still function. And he would turn it on and point it at his neighbor. And he got prosecuted for trying to kill a neighbor. You know, it's dangerous stuff. So, you know, same way, all right, I have a stapler here. We all know what a stapler is. I staple my papers together. You know, it was designed to do that. If I smack you on the head with it, I could kill you. You know, it has a dual, that's not its intent, its purpose, but it can be used for dual purpose. Same thing with whatever this energy is.
But now it's evolved to being manufactured specifically to harm people.
Well, but we don't, it still could have a dual use. Right. It could still be trying to extract information from cell phones, whatever. I do think it was probably used for purposes of incapacitation of individuals, not necessarily to kill them. But look, what's the best way to take a spy or a person in the military off the battlefield? You know, you make them sick. Yeah. But you don't make them sick so that they think someone's doing it to them. But, you know, they go home and they don't go to work for 2 days. That's 2 days that they're not working against your interests as a spy. Now, when Havana became public, and since, it's in the news so often now that regardless of what the intent and the purpose of the use, it has clearly been weaponized because the adversary clearly knows that it is harming people, even if they intended it to be that way or not. So at this point in time, I would say, no, this is an intentional act to harm. You know, you knew or you should have known that it is, and essentially it could be an act of war. Let me tell you, let me read you this one thing.
Okay.
In 2014, the NSA, right, 2 years before, more than 2 years before Havana became public, at this point in time, there is only a small group of us. I didn't know of anyone who knew about this other than I was telling people in Congress, including members of the House Intelligence and Senate Intelligence Committees, who told me they didn't know anything about this. Including Devin Nunes, actually, who I would meet with about this topic back in the day, pre-Trump. I had an NSA client, and we were trying to get workman's compensation for him. And we needed to prove, one, that his event was work-related, which ultimately NSA capitulated on and said it was. But I needed to be able to prove and correlate his development of Parkinson's with the energy device. That is still difficult. If it's still difficult to do now because it's hard to prove conclusively. But they gave me an unclassified memo. It's just a paragraph, a few sentences. I was shocked when they gave it to me because of what it said. It actually didn't help me at all because it didn't prove correlation between the Parkinson's. But this is what it says, and what it says is so meaningful pre-Havana. It reads, the National Security Agency confirms that there is intelligence information from 2012 associating the hostile country to which Mr. Beck traveled in the late 1990s with a high-powered microwave system weapon that may have the ability to weaken, intimidate, or kill an enemy over time and without leaving evidence. The 2012 intelligence information indicated that this weapon is designed to bathe a target's living quarters in microwaves, causing numerous physical effects, including a damaged nervous system. The National Security Agency has no evidence that such a weapon, if it existed, and if it was associated with the hostile country in the late 1990s, was or was not used against Mr. Beck. Now, lawyers helped write that statement, of course.
But it confirms the existence of a weapon that was only speculative until then.
It confirms the existence of intelligence information that there might be a weapon. Right? Doesn't necessarily mean, right? It's like saying you have a document reporting a UFO or a UAP, depending on what term you want to use right now. Does that prove it's a flying saucer alien? No. It proves there's intelligence information about it. But you read that document in the context of what we are exploring now, that document is a smoking gun. Does it prove anything? No, it's caveated in such words of, if it may, if it did exist, right, we might. But I remember telling NSA back at that time, look, why aren't you working with me better? Just tell the Department of Labor that this was a work-related intelligence assignment and you agree that his injury is connected, and pay the workman's comp. It's such a small amount of money. It's one person. And I remember saying clearly, it's not like you're opening Pandora's box. Wow.
They were.
Yeah. Now I understand why they weren't cooperating so much, because there was a Pandora's box that I didn't know of, and Havana opened.
There you go. When we come back, we want to talk about the latest actions in Congress and where we go in the future. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Hey, you. Yeah, you. We're talking to you, and we need your help. As you probably know, independent journalism is a vital pillar of our democracy. Like everything else, it's not free. We're asking all longtime listeners of the show to help support us by becoming a member on Patreon. For the price of a latte, you can help guard democracy. Join us today at patreon.com/JATQ podcast to help us keep bringing you the podcast you love and the facts you deserve.
Hi, we're back. It's Just Ask the Question. With me is Attorney Mark Zaid. Mark, when we left, we were talking about cases that you had 10, 15 years ago regarding something that we now call the Havana Syndrome. 2 days ago, it was disclosed that the U.S. Congress is asking for more information again on this issue, and that they, since the 60 Minutes report, and of course, the FOIA request that you and I filed to get more information, that Congress is now has a renewed interest in it. Where do you see the future of this going? What do you think is going to happen?
So back in December, the House Intelligence Committee opened up a formal investigation into AHIs. And then what you're referring to that just happened within the last few days is, in the wake of the 60 Minutes broadcast from March 31st, which for the first time produced concrete evidence of Russian military intelligence involvement in these attacks, that a number of members of Congress are demanding additional information. I will tell you, and I have worked, as you know, on many conspiracy type cases over the years. I am not a conspiracist. I prefer to debunk conspiracy theories, especially because I think most of the time you can answer it through incompetence or cover your ass, right? I do not think the CIA murdered President Kennedy. I don't think the CIA was competent enough to do so, much less cover up the fact of doing
Occam's
so.
Occam's razor.
Occam's razor, I'm a firm believer in. I will tell you, with this case, and this is what Congress is going to show ultimately over time, I have had authorized access to classified information up to the top secret level in this case. I can't reveal what any of that classified information is. I never would. But what I can tell you is what the United States government is telling the public, especially the Central Intelligence Agency, is an outright, flat-out lie. Absolutely, 100%.
What are they telling us? What are they lying about?
They are telling us there is nothing to see here, that the vast majority of the cases can be explained through environmental or pre-existing medical conditions and history and factors. That is a lie. They're also saying
a lie because what they sent us, I mean, they said it was a vital national security. They couldn't tell us anything. That tells you right there that if it were environmental, they could. So they're admitting they lied, aren't they?
The notion that there is that it is highly unlikely a foreign adversary is involved is an outright lie. And in fact, it is worded in such a way to be disingenuous and misleading, because they indicate in a sentence that there are varying degrees of confidence in that conclusion, but that the ultimate conclusion is it's highly unlikely. Not if you talk to some of the other agencies. Some of them had low confidence, which means this is totally almost unbelievable.
Right.
But yeah, sure, we can't find something of it. I mean, they are trying deliberately to mislead. This director of CIA, Burns, issued a workforce message earlier this week to reinforce that in the wake of the 60 Minutes Der Spiegel insider revelations of Russian military intelligence involvement, that, oh no, we, the CIA, we knew everything they were talking about. We looked at it all. There's nothing to see here. Outright lie. Outright lie.
So what do you think is the future? Do you think we're going to find out?
The future is we are going to find out, and there are going to be good people who, like, I believe Director Burns is. He's been very empathetic with a number of the victims. I feel bad for him because he and others are going to be on the wrong side of history when it is proven that, in fact, at least some of these cases are Russian military intelligence operations and attacks on our
Why wouldn't we just admit that? What are we afraid of in admitting that? Is it because we are involved in the same type of activity, or is it it just makes no sense to me.
There are a number of reasons why, potential reasons why, of course. And I think they overlap. I think one is what you reference. We developed this technology. There are numerous solicitations publicly available that shows we are developing and exploiting and enhancing this technology. To think that the other side, the adversaries, are not doing the same is naive, if not downright idiotic. Of course they are. And some of our adversaries aren't going to be constrained by the ethical parameters and the laws that bind us. They know much better than we do exactly what part, what level of energy kills, right? They're going to know. I mean, we probably know that too, because there have been accidents, you know, over the years in commercial settings.
But I think what you're pointing to is that they, you know, when you point to the law and stuff, they know how to manipulate our laws so they will take things to a degree that we will not.
Well, yes, and just understanding
maybe we haven't admitted that either.
Why are we experimenting on ferrets? Which the article was talking about. PETA's all upset about that. We experiment on the ferrets and rabbits and pigs and stuff because we can't do it to humans. We can't expose humans to microwaves, you know, because it could have a lethal effect. I'm sure there's some level that's allowed, you know, to see, but, and I know of scientists who did that to themselves. Right. They're like, okay, turn on the microwave and I'm standing in front of it. Ow, you know, but they don't do it at a level that obviously would kill. But so that is a factor. Now, I will say in the U.S. government's defense, I've raised this of, what about, are we doing this to the other side? Right. Are we exposing them? And I know of no evidence of that.
If that evidence exists, we'd hear about it from the other side.
That is possible. I mean, look, this is a spy versus spy, tit for tat type of thing. Slash one tire, slash their tire. You know, leave a bunch of crap, dog crap, real dog crap, human crap on the living room floor of the spy in the other country. That's very common practice. Not hopefully not we do, but they do it. But what are the other reasons? Personally, like I said, I believe this has been going on for decades in a form or another. And we didn't do anything to protect our people. I mean, I know that
that's
for a fact because
we're lying.
Because Congress raised that in the hearings in the late 70s. So how long have you known this, State Department? Like 10, 15 years. Did you tell your people who were based in the embassy that they were being exposed to microwaves? No, we did not. So that's a factor. How much do we owe liability-wise? Damages, compensation to thousands of people over the course of decades. We can't protect our people. What are we supposed to do? We're gonna give everybody a personalized detection device to wear where you walk around the foreign city or here in the United
States. Going to try to develop something that could shield them from it, but that's another issue.
Yeah. Look, there it is already in use. Don't think that some of our top government leaders are not walking around with detection devices.
That's
because they are.
Well,
the other issue is, and we've already seen this happen, and I know it for a fact because I know people that have done this. Morale is down in the toilet inside these agencies because of this, and people have quit rather than be assigned overseas because they don't want to bring their family into a danger zone. This is not what it used to be where, like, oh, you're being assigned to go to Afghanistan and Iraq. I'm not bringing my family. It's dangerous. But I'm going to be in Vienna and Frankfurt. Of course I'm bringing my family. Not anymore, because the family members have been hit as well. Infant children, dogs, their pets have been hit and suffered. I mean, you can watch it on the pet. There were people who were watching their pets suffer while they were suffering, you know, from it, or all of a sudden race out of the room and hide in a closet, which the dog had never done before. I mean, there is so much evidence. And look, I can understand why the U.S. government would cover a bunch of this up. There's going to be a lot of responsibility of the U.S. government for that cover-up, even though I do not think it's the U.S. government doing it. I think it's the foreign adversary that's doing it. The other final, and there's, again, more than one, if this is Russia or an adversary doing it, not just overseas to our people in Bogota, Vienna, Havana, Tbilisi, Georgia, here in the United States, in Virginia, in the District of Columbia, in Florida, they've come to our soil and hit and injured our people. That's an act of war. If this was done to the Israelis, how do you think the Israelis would respond to Iran or whomever that did it? What are we doing in response to the foreign adversary criminally and militarily injuring our people?
On that thought, we're going to leave it right there, but that's a thought that we should consider in another podcast. Listen, Mark, thanks for joining us. Anything you want to plug before we take off?
Hey, this is going to continue for quite some time. We are at only the beginning of the story. You know, kind of think about it or picture it as, you know, this is a lengthy written book, but it's been invisible for a while, and we're only starting to see some of the pages and the chapters become well known or public. Again, I'll emphasize that I encourage anyone who knows anything about this, especially those inside the United States government, do not be on the wrong side of history.
There you go. Well, thanks for joining us. The name of the show is Just Ask the Question. I am your host, Brian Kerem. Thanks for joining us, and we'll catch you next time.
Hey, you. Yeah, you. We're talking to you, and we need your help. As you probably know, independent journalism is a vital pillar of our democracy. Like everything else, it's not free. We're asking all longtime listeners of the show to help support us by becoming a member on Patreon. For the price of a latte, you can help guard democracy. Join us today at patreon.com/JATQ podcast to help us keep bringing you the podcast you love and the facts you deserve.